All right, Cobb, I know you can't see me right now because my computer spontaneously updated. But I wanted your thoughts on that. So, again, it's just Charles Huff speaking, and it's nothing more than, hey, this is what we would like to do. And it's been no secret the University of Memphis would like to get into a Power Four conference. But I wanted your thoughts on, it did not seem to me like 2028 was a date that came out of nowhere. It seemed like there was clearly a plan. But what was your reaction when you heard it?
Okay, so before getting into the specifics of the feasibility of 2028, I just am a huge fan of the fact that Charles Huff seems to understand not only the urgency to put a quality product on the field. Of course, that's his primary goal and primary mission, but he seems to understand what the purpose of the football program is at Memphis. He understands the mission of the university. He understands the significance of what a quality football team would mean to the city of Memphis right now. He understands the context of where the university lies in the conference hierarchy. He understands the urgency to make good on the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been poured into a stadium renovation project. Like, he understands the landscape and is casting a vision, I think, on a level that we haven't seen from really anybody other than Ed Scott. Ed Scott, that's his primary job. But to see the football coach actually understand it, embrace it, talk about it comfortably is really encouraging. And so, because like, we don't really get that from the Grizzlies. Like, the Grizzlies have a huge place in the city, but like, Zach Kleiman is a player personnel guy. He's not a vision caster for the city or the franchise, right? And it's kind of the, I mean, Penny is Penny, like, and that's great, but like, you don't see Penny out there talking about on any real deep level the context of where Memphis basketball sits in the greater national landscape, and you know, whatever. Like, Charles Huff just seems to get it and cast the vision on a level that we've certainly not seen from a Memphis football coach that I can recall. So really encouraged by that. I have no idea if that means they'll go over or under the Vegas win total of 7.5 in 2026, right? Like,
it seems to me like FanDuel, like, doesn't even know. Did you, like, that's the other thing is, like, you look at, you and I mentioned it that last week, hey, the Navy has the best chance or the best odds of winning the league. It's still the highest of any other team in any other league. And then you'd be scrolled to the win totals. Basically, it was like everybody had a win total of 7.5, and it was juiced one way or the other. But it's like, it's basically, I felt like Vegas was even announcing, like, we got no idea with this league.
Right. So it's like, okay, if they win 7 this year, doesn't mean that the aspirations are shot. Would it be great to win 10 or 11? Oh, yes, it would be, no doubt. But regardless of what they do in 26, it feels like they've got a coach here who understands the job. And it's about more than just, as Jason Smith said, just winning a bunch of games. It's about taking the program, taking the athletic department, taking the university to the next level. And in a moment where it feels like the city needs something to latch onto to get momentum, not only from a sports perspective, but also from a civic perspective in terms of just needing that jolt and needing that needle moving energy that the core four Grizzlies gave us a generation ago. Like, whether or not Memphis can fulfill that or not, the idea that Charles Huff understands that it could be a vehicle for that is something that really gets me excited. So, Jeffrey, what does it look like, Memphis getting into a power conference 2028? That seems very aspirational to me. And like, one of those things where it's almost like, ooh, you know, you didn't have to put a timeline on that, but he did. And I don't know what the specifics of that look like, because we know the ACC is going to break apart and splinter at some point. But you got to remember that that media rights deal that the ACC is in does not expire until 2036. We think there will be some movement before then with Clemson and Florida State and Miami and, you know, maybe a few others having the financial wherewithal to get out before 2036, and that's when the dominoes fall. But 28 feels a little early.
Yeah, my first reaction was, where did that number come from? Because it didn't feel random. And I'm willing to give these guys the benefit of the doubt, because I can kind of see one of two scenarios. One of the scenarios is, hey, that number has been targeted because they think that there's going to be movement then. And whether it be through consultants, whether it be through, you know, behind the scenes talk with other administrators, other schools, other leagues, that there is the belief that there would be movement in 2028. I'm not saying that that's wrong. All I'm saying is I haven't heard that. Now, where I kind of talked myself into, okay, maybe that's not random. While I don't think anyone is physically moving leagues until 2030, what you do see is more times than not, schools start moving 2 years in advance. And so if you're moving in 2030, it gets announced in 2028. And maybe what he was saying is, hey, by 2028, we have the plans in place. The bigger problem that I have with it is I have no problem with Memphis being aspirational. I think that's their responsibility. But if I'm calling balls and strikes, I don't think the universe is expanding. I think the universe is shrinking. And so my real question would be, okay, if the ACC loses their valuable members, like it's expected, don't know if it happens, but it's expected, what is the status of the ACC at that point?
I think it's a tier two conference. And this is what I told Gabe. I think Memphis is trying to level up from tier three to tier two. And we might just have to make our peace with the fact that the future of college athletics come the mid 2030s is that there's a tier one that's kind of unreachable by the rest of the landscape. It's the Big Ten, the SEC, and a couple of these ACC schools like Clemson, Florida State, Miami, who will jump onto that life raft, therefore opening up spots for the ACC to backfill to be a part of that tier two landscape. Now, I think they'll continue to compete for the same basketball national title, but on a certain level, the football portion of that tiered landscape is going to be almost exclusively SEC, Big Ten, the premier ACC schools, Notre Dame, and then you'll have a tier two, which is the ACC leftovers, the Big 12, and then, you know, your Memphises, your South Floridas, maybe a Tulane, maybe a Boise, and we'll see if Oregon State and Washington State and any of the others from this retooled Pac-12 can kind of latch onto that too. And then your tier three will be your leftover Americans, your Tulsa and UTSA caliber programs, your CUSA programs, most of the Sun Belt, and that's kind of, I think that's how it plays out. And by God, I mean, I think everybody understands Memphis does not belong in the tier three level of that universe.
No, I agree with you on that. If you're talking me into they figure out a way to get into a better league, I get it. I'm just struggling. I guess my point is, I think if Memphis moves up, I don't know if we're dealing in a world, in a universe where there's actually four power conferences.
Yeah, I think it's more. Now, from the basketball side, like what happens with Duke? Like what happens with NC State?
Well, I mean, Duke has stated publicly, like they're maybe not as brash as Texas Tech is, but Duke will, anytime a reporter wants to speak with them, they have mentioned, we are trying to invest in football, we are investing in basketball, and they have clearly stated the whole point is, whatever the universe is heading to, we have to be good.
Yeah. What happens, you know, what happens with Louisville? What happens with Syracuse? I'm naming off good basketball programs here who, if not all these teams catch that next life raft, like there could still be some quality basketball teams left in the ACC. The Big 12 loaded with quality basketball teams. And so I think football is going to be more clearly delineated and clearly separated because look, the Big 10 and the SEC, they hold all of the cards in football. And we've seen they have influence in basketball, hence the expansion of the NCAA tournament. But if the NCAA tournament continues to have access to 32 conference champions and continues to have a robust at-large program, like Memphis's basketball program would benefit tremendously from being in a league, even if North Carolina breaks away and Clemson and Miami break away, even if Duke breaks away, if you're still in a league that has Louisville, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, NC State, you know, that's so much better. So much better than where
you're at. It's so much better than where you're at. I guess, though, the other thing that I am finding interesting is that, no duh, but turns out, Cobb, maybe the Scorax not gonna be a hit.
Right.
If the SCORE Act is not going to be a hit, the bipartisan bill that is in the Senate is going to get voted against as well. We're not getting legislation. And now it seems as though the powers that be, decision makers, administrators, they have finally come to accept what's been true the whole time, but they fought like hell, and that they're not going to get congressional relief. Does that push the Big Ten and the SEC to a breakaway? Because now that it seems like a lot of their talking points are, well, if they're not going to fix it, we're going to have to do it ourselves. But then it also begs the question, it's like, can you really just do a football only breakaway?
That's what it has to be, I think, because
I don't think legally they can do it.
Well, they're already divorced from the NCAA in terms of the postseason structure.
But they've included everyone else.
But they don't have to.
Well, they kind of do, because they're afraid of lawsuits. In the end, that's why they haven't done it. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm skeptical, because then also the people that you'll talk to that are there insistent that the breakaway is happening, they don't have an answer for this question, which is, how do you break away if you're the SEC and the Big Ten and play each other? Because if they break away and start playing each other, they are going to get sued to oblivion for anti-competitive practices.
Well, I don't think I understand that, because they can already pick and choose who they want to play in non-conference games.
Correct. But let's say they break away, form their own new thing, and agree to play each other. That would be a monopoly. That would be anti-competitive, because they would control all the market share and they would not have invited other institutions to play. Theoretically, they have invited everyone to play in their postseason. That is why we have the G6. Even though you and I know it's not realistic, on paper, it is a possibility.
The other thing I thought about going over these Charles Huff comments, and this would be a Debbie Downer on a certain level, but let's just examine, keep an eye on, don't forget about, what is this new Pac-12 going to look like? And is there a universe where it establishes itself as enough of a force in football and basketball to where we revisit the scenario of Memphis, South Florida, Tulane joining up with that league? Like, I'm not saying, I don't think that is fulfilling what he's discussing here.
No.
But if you want it,
if you're asking me to believe that that league is going to position itself to be an alternative, man, Cobb, I'm not convinced that that league's going to be all that better than what they're in.
Yeah, no, and neither am I, and I was not a proponent of them pursuing that. I think the details we've since learned about what that was going to look like verified that it wasn't the financially savvy play. But
I wouldn't even say savvy. I think it would have been irresponsible.
No, I mean, I don't disagree, but is there a way to where that becomes more lucrative? Because we were talking about,
I don't know, because the price to level up now is so expensive. Like, those programs are not getting better. They're getting worse.
So I think about it from the perspective of, like, hey, these are decent brands. Like, Washington State and Oregon State used to be in the pack, like the real Pac-12.
Tom, they've got like some of the worst odds even in the new league. That was what was shocking.
I'm just saying, like, I could see a scenario in which if that reformed Pac-12 puts forth its best foot, has some success, has its act together, and presents you with an alternative, like, you know, like, I don't know that the door is permanently shut on that.
Oh, I don't think it can be. I think the best case scenario, though, and the last time we saw, the schools were apprehensive to do this, but it seems to me like the best path would be whoever gets left over from the ACC, they do what we've talked about, like, you've got to just have the sea to shining sea conference, and even if you have an Eastern division where they just play each other in a Western division, and maybe you meet in a conference championship game or you meet at a conference tournament, but like, you have to band together basically and try to act as one entity. Like, none of your brands are going to be strong enough to be considered power league, but maybe if you have 32 teams that are all competitive and they're trying to win, maybe like, that's your best shot.
Well, that's kind of that tier two that I was discussing. The ridiculousness.
I would argue,
of the
I guess that this is my point, though. I would argue that the Big 12 and the ACC are already tier two anyway.
They are. Yeah. Basketball, not so much. Football, yes. And that's where the delineation occurs, is like, with the Big 10 and the SEC having full autonomy in terms of the voting on the college football playoff. Like, them, quote, breaking away isn't going to be the seismic shift that, like, we think it is, because that's already what it is. Like, they're already divorced from the NCAA.
Unless they have to break away in everything. I agree. If it's just football, it's just kind of saying out loud what's true is it's separate. But if basically the other schools are like, you can break away, you can, the Iowa State AD, let him go. But he's also saying, let him go in everything. Good luck trying to play us in everything else. Good luck having your national championship basketball tournament, baseball, softball, whatever you name it. If they have to break away in everything, that's where I think it starts to get fascinating.
Well, what college sports should be is the Big Ten and the SEC playing their own version of football. Everybody's still in the same boat for basketball, and then the non-rev sports going hyper-local, hyper-regionalized. Memphis playing against Arkansas State, Tennessee Martin, Ole Miss, North Alabama, et cetera. Tennessee playing against, you know, in volleyball, playing against Appalachian State and playing against Kennesaw State and playing against Tennessee Tech in volleyball, right? Like, because the dumbest thing in the world happened this week. Cal went 5,000 miles in baseball across the country to Charlotte, North Carolina, to play against Stanford in the ACC tournament.
3,100 miles, Cobb. Come on.
Single elimination.
5,000 is more like a trip to Hawaii.
Okay, my bad. It's preposterous nonetheless. It's a five-hour flight. They go five and a half hours across the country, three time zones away, to play Stanford, who's in their own backyard. It's single elimination. They lose the game. They get back on the plane, and they go back. I mean, what are we doing? What a colossal waste at a time when jet fuel has never costed more. We're putting the Cal baseball team on an airplane to fly across the country for a single elimination tournament game against a team that's, what, 40 miles away? I mean, just the height of absurdity.
Not even 40.
Yeah, it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. We gotta get away from that. Now, if you know, in football, because it makes money, that's the way it's got to be, then so be it. But never in any world should a non-revenue ACC team be going across the country for a single elimination conference tournament in a non-revenue. It's so wasteful. It's so dumb. And football can be its own thing. Basketball on a certain level is profitable enough to throw geography out the window, but in the rest of it,
I mean,
we gotta have
tournaments profitable enough. Like, I don't know, is regular season bottom tier ACC good enough?
Arguably not. I mean, that's the world we live in.
By the way, they probably spent $50,000 at least to do that.
For what? You know,
like, I mean, even if they flew commercially, I got to think the ticket was $800 a person. They got 25 players, coaches. What, they had to send 40 people at least?
For, for one baseball game.
Yeah, I mean, it's, but like that's the other thing. It's like, do I really trust these people that I've been watching for the last 25 years to figure this out? No.
Well, they're gonna have their choice. Look, I mean, we're trying to cut non-revenue sports right now as it is because there's such a financial drain. Because yeah, I mean, like Arkansas trying to cut tennis. Like actually, I'll say like the SEC to its credit. All the states still touch each other. They're all contiguous, right? Like the footprint there at least makes sense. But the rest of these leagues, it makes no sense. I mean, there's not another conference left in division, okay, let's say FBS, that makes geographic sense. I guess the MAC still kind of makes sense geographically. It's mostly Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, right? Like kind of.
But like even like, what, Northern Illinois is playing Mountain West, right?
Right.
I would argue CUSA kind of does.
It's still all over the place, though.
I mean, what, you go Liberty to the extreme, right? And then is FIU?
You got New Mexico State.
Why did I think they were independent again? I mean, The Sun Belt makes sense from two divisions. Like when you look at it, it's whole. It doesn't make sense, but their division splits make sense.
They do. I mean, you give them credit, but then at the same time, it's like James Madison and Texas State pretty far apart.
Hey, that's Pac-12 Texas State to you.
Well, okay, you're right. You're right.
Because I know when I think Pac-12, I think San Marcos, Texas.
Yeah, no, I just think that's where it's got to go, is to regionalize non-revs and then keep your branding in place for football. I mean, that's what it's for, but volleyball, like,
that doesn't even seem to be on the menu.
Hopefully private equity brings some common sense to that conversation. Wait, how much are you spending in airline costs? How much are you spending on hotel nights?
See, I don't even think travel? I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll just sit there and go, "Wait a minute. All these sports that cost us millions, see ya."
Yeah, well, hopefully there's a middle ground to be found there, which is a school saying, no, our alums will get all upset if we cut tennis or volleyball or soccer. So we're going to let's find a middle ground. We can save millions of dollars if we just play the teams that are within a 3-hour
radius. I don't know
if
you're familiar with private equity. They don't listen to what your ideas are.
Well, we can't just sell our soul to the private equity, but we got to get smarter.
They are, though.
We got to get smarter.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this would be that would be a first. All right. Then there was the other thing I wanted to discuss with you. So lots of chatter about our boy Will Wade. I think you tell me. I think everybody's a little pre-mad. These guys have not been eligible yet. And also it's like, I didn't take what he was doing as double birds to the system. I took what he was doing as, wow, is he desperate?
That's my interpretation as well. I mean, on a certain level, you could say this was his plan all along, and some of these
international
guys.
Well, then why did he recruit all those other guys?
Well, I think when you're recruiting the international players because of the timing of their season, a lot of them don't want to reveal their intentions too early because they're in the thick of a professional season in a meaningful league in their corner of the world. And so they don't want to tip their hand too early, which is why you see some of the international guys make their commitments later in the cycles. But I think it's desperation. And so RJ Lewis, former Big East Player of the Year, he stayed in the draft last year. And he's going to, you know, we saw this play out with Charles Bediako. Like, he's going to need more favorable rulings than what Charles Bediako received if he's going to play. And then Yam Madar, 2020 draft pick of the Boston Celtics. 2020, 6 years ago, he was drafted by the Boston Celtics. He's been playing professionally in the highest Israeli league, the highest European league, for 7 or 8 years. Like, he is a 7 or 8 year veteran of high level professional basketball. And they're going to try to claim that he should get a season of eligibility in college as a 26-year-old because he did some mandatory Israeli military service. Well, the thing is that military service, which he fulfilled, it did not interrupt his professional playing career. So what's the grounds to say that, like, oh, he should be accepted from this? Because if the 5-for-5 thing goes through, which it's not going to happen this week, but if it happens next month, like, the rules are going to be clear. It's 5 years from your 19th birthday. Well, this dude, even if you gave him a 2-year military exemption, he wouldn't be eligible. So, like, I'm with you, man. Like, he's throwing a lot of stuff at the wall to see what sticks. And I think it's like, all right, well, if 50% of these guys get eligible, then I'll at least have a team. I think that's the strategy by Will Wade, is like,
yeah, it seems to me like he's going, you can't deny them all.
Right.
But I do think they could. Like, I guess it seems to me like much of the outrage is like, well, he's going to get a judge in Louisiana that's going to rule in his favor. And it's like, maybe, but we just saw in Lubbock the judge stepped down in the Sorsby case. Alabama had to switch judges twice.
And the Alabama Supreme Court denied Charles Bediako. I bet there's a lot of Bama grads on that state Supreme Court.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Joey, the judge presiding over Aguilar's hearing was at least a Tennessee law professor.
I believe you're correct.
My
faith in the judicial system is returning.
It's not even that. What I have been noticing is that more times than not, the decisions kind of line up with public sentiment. Like, in the end, most people that were familiar with the Bediako thing were like, what are we doing here? And it feels to me like, and again, maybe I could be wrong, but like, I just felt like everybody was getting pre-mad. It's like, he can sign these guys or he can say that they're playing. They haven't been ruled to be eligible yet. And the last piece of evidence that we had said these guys are not going to be. And they took the same legal strategy that he will be implementing.
Right. Well, it's those two who I had the, well, I you could also look at Marcio Santos. He was born in 02, so he'll be on the outer fringes of the 5-for-5. But the two who I think he's really going to have a hard time with are the 26-year-old Israeli and then RJ Lewis. There's no real grounds for either of them. But even if those two guys are a no, that would get him to, I think, 8 players. And then he can add a couple of scraps from the portal and cobble together a team that goes 500 in the SEC.
All right. Speaking of people paying to keep sports alive, we had a damn good dog, although maybe not. And then also, once a dog, always a dog. We got to talk about the latest speeding issue involving either a Bulldog or a former Georgia Bulldog. We'll talk about that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb. I guess Kirby can be absolved of this one. Did you see what our boy Nolan Smith got clocked at?
Ooh, over 100, I hope.
135. Now, it was 135 and a 70. Eagles linebacker Nolan Smith Jr. was arrested Friday and accused of speeding and reckless driving in Georgia. The Twiggs County Sheriff Office told ESPN on Wednesday. According to notes taken by a number of the sheriff's office that night, Smith was clocked at 135 and a 70. On the interstate at 10:41 p.m.
It's not even double. That's not even double the speed limit.
I've also wondered, it's like, is this like you're getting your PhD at Georgia? Like,
yeah,
you get
continuing your education.
Yeah, it's just furthering your education. Like, he's just going back to finish his degree.
He was missing home.
It's just like, at the end of the day, man, that's just a damn good dog.
That's right. Yeah, the legacy of the program.
Damn good dogs. Speaking of damn good dogs, I'm curious about this. So Adam Wexler, who was one of the founders of Prize Picks, he's a Georgia grad, and he's giving $10 million to the Bulldogs basketball program. According to Wexler, basketball is his favorite sport. Here's my question. If I say somebody's donating $10 million to Georgia Athletics, I think we'd all say that's a damn good dog, right?
Right.
If I then say he's giving it to basketball, is that still a damn good dog? Because you know a lot of that fan base is like, Cobb, that's like four extra football players.
Yeah, well, the basketball program probably needs it a little more.
Well, listen, I'm happy for Mike White.
Okay, you got to imagine he's working with like a major gifts representative or something, like probably like the VP of giving on this. And they're probably like, hey, look, we're okay on football. Like, basketball needs it more.
I guarantee it. Kirby wasn't the one that was told.
Yeah, I'm sure Kirby wouldn't turn down $10 million.
But also, to your point, if there's like an overseer, but I don't really think that's how that works. I think in general, those people that we're talking about, they want you to just give to the collective, and then they'll sort it out. This feels more like...
But think about it. If he says, I'm giving $10 million,
where could
and
it
I want
be
to give it to basketball, and they're like, well, what if you just gave it to our general fund? Or what if you gave it to the collective? And he says, no, I'm giving $10 million. I want it to go to basketball. What are they going to say? No?
No. But that's what I'm saying. That's why I don't think there was somebody from Georgia being like, listen, if you're going to give $10 million, I think it could best be used in basketball. I think it's him saying, all right, I'll give, but I want it to go to basketball.
It's just also so random. Like, who out there, other than this guy, is so passionate about Georgia basketball that they're like, yeah, I got $10 million I can give to that program. It'd be like giving $10 million to Mississippi State basketball or something. Like what? Like what? Why?
I would argue it would shock me less to hear somebody gave $10 million to Mississippi State basketball than Georgia basketball, because State has in their history cared about basketball. Georgia has always viewed it as a distraction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's not a, you know, when you do like the ratio of like caring football to basketball in the SEC, I mean, Georgia, LSU, in terms of like the disparity there. And then you got those on the opposite end where it's like Kentucky and Arkansas probably care more about basketball than they do about football. And then you got some in the middle now. I'd argue like a Tennessee now more in the middle, like a Vanderbilt kind of in the middle. But like Georgia and LSU comes to mind. Like just.
And I think historically LSU has more periods of caring about basketball than Georgia does.
Well, they clearly care enough now to where they're going to spend on.
Yeah, but this one felt more like, let's get Will back. But like, I don't have this great sense. Although it seems like, I've also wondered this. Does Will Wade have the money if all these guys get eligible? Because it feels like even he's like inherently admitting not all these guys are going to get there. I would be curious to know. If they all somehow were eligible, I bet there'd be some guys that mysteriously disappear because he doesn't
can't
have
pay them all.
Correct.
Yeah. He's promised them so much.
Right.
Like,
but it's like he's promised the job to like 10 people. It's like almost like whoever says yes first. It's kind of, Miami. I think Miami did this with Beck and Quinn Ewers. They knew they were taking one of them. They offered him basically the same thing, and that's why all of a sudden Beck just jumped.
Well, it's all right with LSU basketball. It's basically like the reason they're going after these players is because either other schools realized it would be hard to get them eligible, or other programs didn't want to pay for them, or both. So LSU is overpaying for guys that might not even be eligible. Otherwise, they would have committed to other schools. Like, it's not like that Will Wade just has some amazing international talent service that just discovered these guys that nobody else had ever seen. No, there were dozens of other high major programs that were like, not eligible, or too expensive. And Will Wade's like, yeah, give me all of them. Give me all of them.
I wish we had a better case study than Will Wade or LSU, but it also, if I say coach from SEC program is operating like they're not taking the CSC seriously, like, that would be a good piece of evidence that, like, hey, all these hangups that people are talking about, like, that's going away. But there's also the Will Wade of it all. Like, if there's one person that's just going to ignore it doggedly, it's going to be him.
Yeah, that's who he is, man. It's just, I mean, he's Will Wade.
I push back, though, on the he's bad for the sport. I think every story needs a good old-fashioned villain.
Oh, he fits the role, buddy. He fits the role.
And you know what, though? I kind of respect it to a certain degree. He's intellectually honest about it. Like, Nate Oates is kind of the, you know.
He tries to portray himself as a good guy. I care about Betty Ocko's education.
And, like, you know, I was at Mass praying about it this morning. It's like, oh, give me a break. Like, ugh. Like, Will Wade is like, you know what you're getting. He doesn't present itself as anything else.
And he's quite honestly perfect for LSU.
This was George's. He's like, maybe it's more of an off-season topic, but has LSU officially become the school with the most hateable coaches?
I don't even think it's close.
So we were trying to think, like, I don't think, like, Jay Johnson, I think there were some people that were upset how he left Arizona, but I don't think there's enough people that consider baseball a visible spot. So in terms of your three most visible coaches, Kiffin, Will Wade, Kim Mulkey, that's a pretty good starting three.
I mean, it doesn't even get, yeah, it's not, yeah.
Like, who's
you can't find three more hateable coaches than that.
Like, if you're a Memphis fan, maybe you're not like a Rick Barnes guy, but it's like, Heupel's pretty, there's not really like much to dislike.
Yeah, right.
Rick is respected by most in the business.
Elanders is understated and under, you know, just whatever. Like, if you hated Tony Vitello, I understand that. But, like, Josh Elander is not controversial. Now, I will say the people who hate the women's basketball coach, Kim Caldwell at Tennessee, mainly Tennessee fans.
Yeah, but, like, that was the other thing. Last year, they loved her.
Until she didn't win and then had to flip her whole roster. And then she got blamed for why Tony Vitello went to San Francisco. But,
Tennessee fans need to figure out. They have blamed 15 different things for why Vitello left, other than just going, he got the San Francisco Giants job.
Jeffrey, I'm going to give you another school that has a very hateable group of coaches. Kevin O'Sullivan and Todd Golden. Boy, they are up there in terms of a 1-2 punch. Now, John Summerall.
The problem is Summerall's he's pretty likable.
Right now, give it a few years. I couldn't tell you who their women's basketball coach is. Sorry.
No chance.
Yeah. Yeah. But those two, man. But Sully and Golden.
That's my thing.
That's
is
a good
like
one.
That's a good.
But they don't have all three.
That's a good 2 and 3.
Yeah.
You know that they're number one. They're number one guy. They're Friday night guy. He's not getting it done.
Nah.
Like. They're really pitching like a Sunday guy on Friday and kind of, but they're like, hey, our 2 and 3s, we're going to win 2 out of 3 every weekend.
Uh-huh.
All right. Also,
it's LSU and it's not even close.
Over at the CJ Cup, which is about as uneventful now of an event, although it does seem like they got all the Dallas guys to play. If Brooks, who has at the top of the leaderboard, if he wins, the ramifications are, so he would be allowed to get into signature events, correct?
Yeah.
And I think he can play the playoffs, but he's not eligible for the bonus prize money. But he could play for the tournament purses.
Right.
I think this is the most likable version of Brooks I can remember in a long time.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm enjoying like seeing his, I'm found the joy again sort of thing. And it's like, this is different. Like, I don't ever remember seeing this version of Brooks.
Also, tough look. Did you see Lady J and P's lawsuit against all, they tried to get it to the Supreme Court, didn't make it. So there's $750 million lawsuit against everyone that spoke ill of the Reeds. It's officially dead.
Oh,
that is a sad day. Listen, there's one thing I believe. Lady J will be back.
She will be back.
Lady
She's
J
not
will be
going in there.
But, like, there's something to be said for the two Liv guys that are just like, shutting up and playing golf, it makes them more likable.
Well, they've already got, I mean, they got paid. They got their signing bonus to go to Liv. They got whatever money they made on Liv. So the money thing, like, okay, fine. I don't get the allure of a potential $10 million payout for winning the tour championship. Fine. I just want to compete and get back in the world of golf again. I mean, that's what it is. And like Brooks, because I think the best
Brooks
thing Brooks
live
ever did,
is Brooks live at Shinnecock?
I would think so, the way he's playing right now. If he can if he can make putts. Now, we'll say these are super spongy, soft
greens. These are pillow
Shinnecock's
greens.
Shinnecock's not going to be that way, right? But he's striking the ball really well, and that was true even before this week.
Yes.
But so I think the best thing Brooks ever did was go on Full Swing and like take people behind the curtain into why he went to Live. Because he didn't feel like, health-wise, he could play on the PGA Tour anymore. People gave him a pass for that reason, and they're giving him a pass now as he comes back.
And he was less antagonistic about it than everybody else. Right. It felt like even at his height, he never believed in it. All right, my man, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Appreciate you, bro.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. When we come back, we'll tell your story, and it's a doozy. Can't wait for this one. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George. For today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. Let's go to Steve Sarkisian, who was addressing the Ole Miss basket weaving comments. We were talking about the inequities in college football. The only reason the Ole Miss thing came up is because two of my best friends were there, Lane Kiffin and Pete Golding.
Sure.
The inequities in college football.
Uh-huh.
What do you think Texas's roster cost?
A lot more than most of the country.
We know that when we would compete with them, that they were able to take players and that and then they were able to graduate. I probably shouldn't have used basket weaving as my example for the class. Macroeconomics. I don't give a damn. Yoga. We have yoga at UT. Like, the class part of it was irrelevant. The point I was trying to make is that UT, you have to complete half of your degree at the University of Texas. 60 hours. You have to do those 60 hours in UT to get a degree from the University of Texas. I'm sure Cam Coleman's getting that degree.
Oh, I'm sure.
Cam's going to be what? No worse than what? The third receiver taken next year?
Also, why are we just throwing out macroeconomics as like, that's not a bad course?
Rule number one, boys. We don't tell these stories. We tell our story about the inequities of college football coming from the University of Texas coach. God, you hate to see that little underdog just fighting from underneath, trying to fight for what's right.
What a story.
My thanks to David Cobb and to Jason Smith for joining the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast after the program ends. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.